Hello, once again. Welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoog, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Blue Monday. No, things haven't been going well for the hometown team, but you hear about that on other programs. But we all support the Royals. We wish them well when their series continues on Tuesday night in their striving to win the World Series. We wish them the best. Other things are going on in the city as well. I saw a show Friday night at the Kansas City Repertory Theater over at the Copacan building in downtown Kansas City in that Power and Light district. It was nice and quiet and absorbing inside the Copacan Theater. Oh, across the street at the Power and Light Center, the people were going nuts watching sports. But I'm glad I went because it was a very absorbing and very interesting, culturally absorbed show that was going on at the Copacan Theater. It was called The Who and the What, essentially I should let them explain, dealing with Islamic issues, and we all have that on the forefront of our minds today, and how they deal with things as families, and how that kind of stretches across the spectrum. In some ways, their issues are not that much different than issues that people have right here in Kansas City in many, many ways. With us to tell us all about the who and the what are two of the members of the cast, two of the key members of the cast, actually. It's kind of a conflict of generations as much as a conflict of issues and belief system as well. Tony Mirchandani? Is that close, Tony?
Yes, very.
He plays the role of the father in this show. I suppose we think of you more as the old world outlook on things.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, is that the way you think of it as you're performing
the
role?
Yes, I've actually been inspired by my own father because he faced a similar issue in real life, and I saw the way he reacted, and I took some of that into my performance.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be good to have something to pattern off after.
Yes, it helps. It helps, definitely.
One of his daughters in the show, and he has two daughters, and they're very different. The two sisters are very different young ladies, but Raina Salem, Manganiero.
So close. You're doing great. Rania Salem Manganiero, yeah.
She's with us as well, and your character's name is Zarin, if I remember right.
Zarina, yes.
Here playing the show now. There are others in the cast. Local favorite Rusty Sneary is in the show as well. He actually plays the man who's involved with your character.
That's
in the
right.
Show.
That's right.
And you have another sister that is in the show.
Kanajat, yes.
And they all play key roles in this story. I was thinking about how to begin things. Would you like to take a brief shot, one of you, at the storyline to get the audience underway? It's kind of I can't say clash of cultures because it's all the culture of Islam and the different interpretations of that. Maybe my way of putting it would not be correct. The old world outlook, as far as her outlook, which is more of a contemporary woman's look on the situation. What do you think, Tony?
No, I wouldn't quite agree with you. It's the outlook of a normal Muslim family even today, even if they migrated from Pakistan or wherever to America. The basis of a Muslim family has always been that you will not marry outside your religion, and in the event you do, the person you're marrying must convert to Islam. All right, so that's a normal thing all over. And it's not radical in any way. The daughter in this case, she doesn't really rebel against that. While she obeys her father's preferences for marriage, etc., her dilemma is that the Prophet Muhammad, as depicted in the modern Islamic world, is not quite what she thinks he should be, or she wants to probe deeper, and that is where the problem arises. because people have set notions, all right.
Right.
But she digs deeper, and maybe now she can take over from me.
Well, I think, you know, that's some of the, definitely the religious content of the play, but so much of it is about, you know, yes, she's working on this controversial manuscript about the prophet, and she's returned home after kind of living this academic, more individualistic life, and she returns home like many people in America do after leaving to a more patriarchal family, and I think it's a lot to do with that coming back into a stronger social structure and trying to be an individual. So it's actually quite a relatable situation, although yes, there's talk about religion and Islam, but it's really a family and issues of family and, you know, idolizing your father or your sister or your religion, whatever it is. And it's kind of about breaking down these boundaries and how you can, you know, try to, I guess, see each other as equal as well, instead of just trying to define someone by their qualities versus what, you know, what is that intangible thing that you love about them, instead of just defining them as a daughter or a father or a prophet, for example.
Sure. Pleasing our parents are always difficult.
Yes, indeed.
They always have, different concepts of what you will turn out to be, often than the way you actually do turn out to be.
Yes, but like most families, there are stories within the family that are sad, or events that have happened that are sad. So on the exterior, people might be laughing and joking, but many people, many families have a certain sadness, a certain sad undercurrent, and that is what this also shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is why a lot of people can relate to it, because whether you're Christian, Muslim, Jewish, whatever, you will still have certain incidents that would have happened in your family that brought grief.
Mm-hmm. You know. And Ayad is such an amazing, Ayad Akhtar, who wrote the play and just recently won a Pulitzer Prize for his show Disgrace that's on Broadway. He is such an amazing writer, and he did such a nice job at kind of respecting audiences enough to be able to write it in a very comedic and dramatic sense all at once. And so there's a lot of lightness to it with the depth that that Tony was just talking about as well. So it makes it actually a really fun experience, and it morphs from being, you know, having lighter qualities to then deeper qualities as it moves on, and it makes it really fun, a roller coaster ride. It's quite a short play, and I think one of the best things about it is definitely not boring. So you're on this roller coaster ride, and Ayed is just, he's such a master of words, and it's just been such a pleasure, you know, to go along for the ride, I guess.
Yeah, and I think also there are four characters in the play, and each one has been very clearly defined. But I think what is also interesting is that there are two or three characters not in the play who are also so clearly defined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like her mother, that my wife.
Sure.
We talk about her a lot. Mm-hmm. So she's almost there. And Zarina's ex-love,
right.
Ryan, he's there, and yet we don't see them. And the difference between, say, Zarina and Mahavish as two daughters, one very intelligent, extremely brainy, and unimaginably high IQ, and the other one trying to learn words and, you know, struggling with anything which is with intangible thought. You know, the father, trusty fellow, right? He loves to take center stage. It's all about him, really. I made so many sacrifices for you. I have made so many sacrifices.
Sure.
You know? Yeah, so that makes it very interesting also.
Yeah. I I don't want to give away too much of the plot, and that's hard to do, and ask questions as well. But actually, I came away from it thinking, you held it together pretty well. I think there would be some that wouldn't be able to hold their emotions together as well as you did.
Well, I suppose I just had a kind audience.
No, I would think some would get much more angry than you did. Your reasons for disagreeing with her, we'll put it that way,
right,
were understandable.
Yes, I suppose so, yes.
We're understandable. Not that everyone would agree with you, but I think they would find your reasoning understandable.
I think that's what Ayad also intended. He doesn't necessarily want you to agree. Mm-hmm. I don't agree, but think about it.
Sure.
Right?
And that was your approach. Yeah.
Yes. And like I said, my performance was largely inspired by my own father.
Yeah. I'm sure that probably adds a lot to it. Now, on the other hand, I found your reasoning perfectly understandable as well.
Well, I think that's the point, right, is that you're watching these characters have, you know, these conflicts on stage, and you find yourself, you know, agreeing with one person one second, and then the next second you're like, no, maybe they're right, or no, you know. And so that you have to, as an audience member, you have to kind of keep up, and you have to try to figure out how you feel. So there isn't really one solution, and I think that's much closer to real life, you know, where you can't, it's harder to, you know, really say that there's one, to really say that there's like an absolute, mm-hmm. Or to live in polarities is a really difficult thing.
Every character has contradictions. In real life, I find myself reacting differently to different situations before different people. Right, so I do contradict myself in real life, and every good piece of literature also has characters that are contradictory. So you're not the same. You can't be the same.
Yeah, and it's actually the skill. There's this this Whitman quote from Leaves of Grass, which is, do I contradict myself? Then I contradict myself. I contain multitudes. I think that's it. But it's this idea that, you know, you can be full of all of these different kind of polarizing ideas, and that's actually what makes you a full person. I think all these characters kind of struggle to empathize with each other when actually, if they do, they're actually more of a full human being, which I think they, you know, can realize in the end.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Those are the rounded characters that you can empathize with. I think we've all, in this play, struggled to bring that about. Each of us, the four actors, have worked towards bringing all those contradictions together into a character.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now your character writes. Are you writing your dissertation? Is that what she is doing?
No. It's she's already gotten her degree, but she's writing. It's a manuscript for a novel.
Uh-huh. I see.
And it's controversial. In a way, it's trying to humanize the Prophet Muhammad as a way of. Let's just say she's trying to write herself out of her own kind of social imprisonment in a way. And so while she's doing that, that's quite a controversial thing to be doing. She gets into some trouble with her family. Yeah. We won't go into it too much. You know,
and not just her family, with the world at large.
Yeah, with the world at large, her family and her... partner or lover. Yeah.
Every character in the show expressed at least some degree of wonderment over why she wrote what she wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them came around, others... but I guess it probably was the shock value. Would this be in reality, if this something like this were to happen, would it be as shocking as you thought, your character, I should say, I say you, your character thought it would be in reality?
In my personal life, no. I'm very liberal, and you're welcome to your views, and I might even buy your views. I might discard mine and buy in real life. But the character of Afzal is not like that. He has strict beliefs, right? He is not going to budge from those beliefs. I can't see Afzal having a glass of wine, for instance. It would be cranberry juice or whatever, right? And of course, he says that clearly two or three times in the play, that she's not going to marry anyone who's not a Muslim. But at the same time, a little undercurrent which comes up is that marrying a white man for a Pakistani is a good thing, right? It's a good thing. It's something to be proud about. And so, and if the white man is a Muslim, it's great. he would be preferred over or a Pakistani man who's a Muslim, right? So that's also been brought up to be in a very subtle way. Those who get it, get it.
Yeah.
You know, but then this is the psyche, largely, of the South Asian, of the Southeast Asians, India, Bangladesh, Pakistan. You know, getting married to a white person is fine,
huh.
Right?
Yeah, well, yeah, I know in the show, and again, I don't want to give too much away, but your love interest, your romantic interest in the show is a converted Muslim. Mm-hmm. He was not born a Muslim.
Right.
He became one of his own free will. Does that give him just as much character within the system, as we say, as if he were born a Muslim?
In fact, it gives him an edge over other Muslims. And also remember that her first love was also a white guy,
uh-huh.
Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's been white. And this guy would have said yes to Ryan. Her father would have said yes to Ryan if he had converted.
I see.
Right? Mm-hmm. But he did not convert.
Yeah. So. But, you know, it's a really... it's the wonderful thing about the play, though, is that it comes off. It's just a very specific circumstances of the play. It's hard to generalize about if this is what every family is like or anything. And Ayed does a really good job at setting it up, so we have these very specific circumstances. And I think one of the yes, Zarina is writing this controversial manuscript, and she doesn't date the most traditional guys. But I think that, her love or her sense of spirituality or her love for a greater something in this world, or what we might call the who, those intangible things, is vast. And I think that her this controversial manuscript is actually an exploration into kind of a greater sense of herself and what some people might see as religion. So it's not really a bashing of those sort of things. It's actually kind of an interesting honoring of the greater world, the world at large, I'd say.
Well, the fact that the two girls grew up in the southern United States.
Mm-hmm. In Atlanta, yeah.
In the Atlanta area, went to the university.
Yeah.
But there would be a lot more things to consider than normally so, I would think.
Yeah.
And then, of course, and she's writing the book, and again, let's not give too much away, but is she, in a way, exercising her own demons as well as being critical?
Absolutely, and I think that's, she went to Harvard, and then, her mother died. These are the circumstances of the play, and then she comes back to kind of take the place, almost, of the mother in the house. She's cooking, she's doing all these things, and she's working on this manuscript at the same time. And I think that, in a way, this idea of de-idolizing of a religious figure is a way of, writing out her own demons, de-idolizing her father, trying to figure out a way to live with these people she loves so much, even though that they are doing things that she fundamentally disagrees with. And so it's kind of like, how do you rely on the comfort of these traditional circumstances while they're actually the very thing that are crushing you right now?
Sure. We're speaking with two of the performers in The Who and the What, currently a production of the Kansas City Repertory Theater, running now through November 16th at the Copacan Theater, their theater that's located downtown near the Power and Light District. It's actually in the H&R Block building downtown. At 13th and Main, the Copacan Stage, and the number to call for more information is 816-235-2700. You can also inquire and make arrangements online at kcrep.org. We're speaking with Tony and Raina about the show. So interesting. I would love to know what, and not just the local performances, but as this show has played across the country, what has the audience reaction been to it?
I think I was fairly surprised at the reaction. I didn't expect such a positive reaction. I really didn't. Because the play, while it is funny, it also has very deep undercurrents, and it makes you stop and think. And I don't think plays that make you stop and think are that popular, right? I mean, who the hell wants to sit down and think when you've gone for entertainment? But this this manages to combine both, because you're laughing all the while, and I know you're thinking, and what the audience is actually. The way they reacted, particularly in the last two scenes, I think they were laughing at one moment, and I could see the hankies. I could see them sobbing. I could see them dabbing their eyes, and you know, and yet 30 seconds later they were laughing.
Yeah.
And that is an achievement, I think, that Ayad Akhtar, our writer, has. I mean, that's a great achievement, I think, to be able to do that. People do laugh and cry in the same place, same movie, but what happens is, all right, this is a different scene, so this scene I laugh, and then this scene makes me cry, but the same scene, within 30 seconds, you're laughing and crying. I haven't seen that before.
Yeah, it's really spectacular, actually, and the audiences here have just been... I've been wowed, because so much of the play, the action of the play is actually has a lot of almost philosophical content, and that's that paired with actually a lot of emotional, the emotional action of the play, people are actually following, and I just think... our audience members are just amazing multitaskers, because they've been able to take in all of these different elements at once, and they gasp, and, you know, for moments that are physical as well as moments that are intellectual. And I've just been, you know, they've been riveted in kind of a vocal way. It's almost, there's moments in the play which are a little bit, they're very intense, and you almost feel like you're in a stadium of a game. You know, you can hear people like cheering you on, or, you know, the surprise element is high. and I think that we're going to continue to get really good audiences here in KC.
The Middle Eastern culture seemed such a mystery to us, until I actually traveled to a couple of those countries within the last year. It was a big mystery to me, too. And I still find it to be a mystery as well. And I think that's part of what the audience finds so fascinating about some of these issues,
mm-hmm.
and the people involved. You've both performed off-Broadway. Did you hear about this play when it played there?
I heard that it was really spectacular, and unfortunately I missed it. But I was very sad that I missed it. But yes, a bunch of people told me, they're like, this is the best play I've seen all year. It's so intelligent, so exciting all at once. How does he do that? and then I just felt so honored to have this.
What kind of reaction has the author had in the Islamic countries, for instance? I guess you're from India. Is India considered Islamic?
No.
I think of it as a Hindu country, really.
Yeah, it's a Hindu country. But then we have more Muslims in India than Pakistan has,
mm-hmm.
because our population is
of the population.
Yeah,
sure.
We have 20% of the population of India is Muslim, and that's a huge number. It's a huge number. We have a population of 1.2 billion, right? So you can imagine how many Muslims we have. So we all familiar with Muslim culture in India, and. Like, I often greet my Muslim friends with an adab, right? That's the way Muslims greet each other. And out of respect for them, I would say adab to them. And we celebrate Eid. Eid is very widely celebrated in India, almost to the same extent as Diwali. You know, so that's the beauty about being in India. Both the religions, the two major religions in India, right, coexist. Sometimes there are problems, but by and large, very peaceful coexistence.
Yeah. Now you're from Lebanon, you told me.
Yeah, I'm half Lebanese, and there's definitely a rich culture to draw from there as well. There's all different types of religions there, and
play be successful in Lebanon? Do you think?
So this is a controversial play, and not just what she's writing, but the play is controversial in and of itself, just because of the arguments that are being had. You know, even though their character is saying them, they're still controversial arguments. And in certain circles, yes, it would be very, very successful. It would be the holy grail of all plays. And in certain circles, it would be very dangerous. It's a very touchy time right now, and so Yeah, but it's an amazing play, and I think you know Ayed has done a wonderful job, kind of mediating all the sort of questions about his own religious background, and you know, taking the compliments, but also you know, listening to everyone that's also having a hard time with how he represents people, and I think ultimately he's doing the best job he can at just simply telling a story about a family.
Yes.
There happens to be all these other circumstances, like, yes, you know, there's like 10 million ways a person can define themselves, you know, as a sister or a writer or, you know, a woman. And, you know, religion happens to be one of those things. So I think, you know, in this play, he does a wonderful job at having that be one of the many elements of action in this you know, family.
It is above all, like you said, a family story.
Yeah.
Different religions. I hate to single out one. I guess I have to give an example. I can see a Catholic family having some of the same differences of opinion.
Yes, of course. Yes, but I think, like Rania just said, she used the right word, dangerous. It could be dangerous in many places. If you ask me, I wouldn't risk putting this play up in, say, Pakistan.
No.
There's no way, right? We'd be in trouble, and maybe even in India. Yeah. So, but America is open to new ideas.
This is your word. We are that. See, just add anything to that. The name of the show is The Who and the What. I think you have a good idea of what it's about. And if you want to make arrangements for that, you can call their number, the rep's central ticket office number. It's 816-235-2700, or arrangements can be made online. And, of course, much more information about the actors, the actresses, the writer especially. All that is very fascinating, really. On their website at kcrep.org. The show runs through Sunday, November 16th. I guess it's basically a Tuesday through Sunday.
That's right.
Random shows, and they'll be there through November 16th. Looking at other cultures can be fascinating, mm-hmm. and this is just one element of many, of course. But there's a lot of learning to be done. Let's just say that.
For all of us, definitely.
Yeah, I want to thank you both for coming. Tony.
Mirchandani.
Thank you. And Raina Salem.
Rania Salem Manganero.
Thank you very much.
You got
both
it.
Both of you for coming. Two of the key characters, but there are four strong characters in the show as well. But two of the key characters in The Who and the What, running through November 16th at the Copacan Stage, that's downtown rather than on campus, of the Kansas City Repertory Theater. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank
for being
you.
With us. After our break, we'll continue. Billy Mahoney is back with us. She's going to talk about her next tap jam and tap dancing, how she's managed to tap her way around the world. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame! Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. If you want your movie to be packed with action, why not have a stuntman direct it? That's exactly what Keanu Reeves decided when he got the script for John Wick, a brutally violent R-rated shoot-'em-up about a retired hitman drawn back into the game by Russian mobsters who wronged him. Chad Stahelski, Reeves' stunt double on the Matrix trilogy, piles on endless scenes of highly choreographed mayhem and delivers them at a very brisk pace. For action fans, John Wick is a decadent guilty pleasure. Bill Murray is an unlikely candidate for beatification in the comic drama St. Vincent. Murray plays a hard-drinking curmudgeon whose cold demeanor is melted by his grudging friendship with his new 12-year-old next-door neighbor. Murray is solid, and the likable supporting cast includes Melissa McCarthy, Naomi Watts, and newcomer Jaden Lieberer. It's a very sweet and well-acted movie that's also somewhat forgettable. The Sublime and the Beautiful is a dark and brooding drama shot in Lawrence, Kansas, starring, written, and directed by Blake Robbins. It deals with a college professor who's brought to the breaking point when a devastating tragedy hits his family. This stark examination of grief and its consequences is presented by a skilled group of actors and provides Robbins with a showcase for his subtle acting. While truthful and observant, The Sublime and the Beautiful is also an oppressively sad and gloomy film. Also opening this week, Rudderless is a musical drama written by former Kansas City resident Casey Twinter. Billy Crudup stars in William H. Macy's directorial debut. Dear White People is a comic drama about race relations on an Ivy League campus. And Ouija is a low-budget horror entry from Hasbro about spirits awakened by the classic board game. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. Freeze Frame!
Hey, do you want to get rid of your unused car, motorcycle, or boat and help KKFI at the same time? The proceeds from the sale of your vehicle will benefit KKFI, and the law allows a tax deduction equal to the gross proceeds from the sale of the donated vehicle. For more information, call the toll-free number at 1-866-628-2277.
Listen to Mike Murphy's Halloween special, All Home Brewed, music for All Hallows Eve. Actual program airs Wednesday morning, 6 to 8. Your calendar may vary.
We need more music.
We don't need that right now. Not yet. Maybe in a little while. Welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. I'm always excited when Billy Mahoney comes on the show. She's danced and tapped all around the world. What's it like to tap your way around the world?
I'm just my various different aspects of dance and performing have taken me all around the world, not just tap dance.
That's right. I think it's a nice play on words to say you tapped your way around.
Right.
Because
yeah.
People envision you going across the ocean and tap. Yeah. It's not really like
that. I think it's dance my way around.
Dance your way around. Well, Nicole English is with us as well.
Hello, Michael.
It's nice to have you again. Boy, I've known Nicole for many years. We won't say how long.
Yeah.
But it's been a few as well. They are here. Oh, Billy's going to tell some stories and things like that. But they're here to talk about their Fall Tap Jam, what's coming up on Thursday, November the 6th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Uptown Arts Bar. You're going to bring out the tappers and celebrities and tap once again.
Yes. We started this way, way, way back in various venues around the city. And actually, I did it in other cities before I came back home to Kansas City. And we invite all tap dancers to come and tap dance with us. We have live musicians, jazz musicians. We trade fours. That means the music plays four bars. Da da da. One, two, four, five, six, seven, eight. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Then you answer. Da da do ba do 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 ba da da do da di da 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 da. The musician plays again, and then you improvise. We like to improvise if people want to show a routine they have, but with live music.
Yeah,
we can also do that. But
with established musicians.
Oh, yes.
Here.
And Mike Ning and Victor Perlmutter have played for many, many of my tap jams and tap dance, National Tap Dance Days. And so I give them a list of the music, the old music from the 30s and 40s and 50s, and that have a good swing beat. That and good jazz beat and that we can improvise in.
When it was National Tap Dance Day, was that your first one? That's the first one I saw.
No, that's on May 25th or sometime around that date.
That's a big one.
That was the birth date of Bill Bojangles Robinson.
Sure.
And it was declared by the United States Congress that we should celebrate tap dance on May 25th. And so Congress said to do it, and I said, well, do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, just for the people that don't know, now that's the Bill Bojangles Robinson. That's the song is about him. Mr. Bojangles, the Sammy Davis Jr. song.
I guess so.
I think he
was the first Afro-American superstar in the movies, and he danced with Shirley Temple.
Yeah, they danced up the steps in that movie, where she was the little Southern Belle.
Right.
I forget which movie it was. They all kind of blend together.
Right, yeah.
But
I
think
it was Littlest Rebel.
Littlest Rebel? Yeah, and well, then he and Shirley danced up and down the steps.
Oh, yeah, several movies he did with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah, but you have celebrities come to your Tap Jam.
Oh, yes,
too.
The McFadden Brothers come if they don't have a gig. And, you know, and we invite all tap dancers to come.
It's Rich Hill sometimes comes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Rich Hill will probably be there on a Thursday evening. And he sits in. We invite musicians to come in and sit in and jam with our keyboard and drummer. And and we just have a big party, have a ball.
Yeah, and City in Motion is involved. You teach classes, and Nicole teaches classes, and arranges classes, I guess. Isn't that one of your jobs at City in Motion?
Yes. Yeah. We're, as a matter of fact, we have a new session coming up November 10th. So if you want to take, you know, tap dance lessons with Billy, you know, that would be a good opportunity. So, you know, they can always find out more information about the Tap Jam from the Arts Bar or from City in Motion. Do you want me to give that phone number?
Yeah, why don't you?
I think
816-561-2882.
Okay, and I also have cityinmotion.org. I have uptownartsbar.com. Apparently there's a Facebook page. Is that a City in Motion page or a Billy Mahoney page? It's a City in Motion page?
Yes.
On Facebook?
Yes. I'm not in charge of that. I am in charge of the website. Uh-huh. So I will put the new schedule up tonight.
Yeah.
Now that we're mentioning it on the radio.
How often are you going to have the jams now? I know the classes are on an ongoing basis, and they start every few months?
Every 9 weeks.
Yeah.
Every 9 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yes.
Well, that's pretty often.
And we start new beginning tap classes every 9 weeks. So if you've never done it before, you come in and try your feet. And then I have intermediate tap and advanced tap.
Now, how often do you have the tap jams? Because some people like to go watch, and it's fascinating
about,
to watch.
About every other month.
Yeah.
Every 2 or 3 months, depending on the dates that it falls on. When it falls on
a holiday.
Labor Day, we don't try to do that. Or if it falls on New Year's Eve, because it's the first Thursday of the month. That City in Motion does the does the shows, the presentations, and so we do the Tap Jam every second or third month.
Yeah, I suppose I should mention the Uptown Arts Bar has different groups. Is it every week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday?
They have different groups that come in at different times. You know, they're booked for different times on different days. Our spot happens to be, you know, first Thursdays. Between 7 and 9.
Yeah.
I think they have poetry reading and different musical
slam
groups.
Slam poetry. And
I've seen all kinds of interesting things there. Well, I mean,
music.
Interesting.
Yes.
Right.
Burlesque.
That's right.
And the idea is to promote the arts.
Yes.
Yeah. I met the gentleman on one of my visits. I guess finding a drinking establishment motif is unusual, but this is one he decided to try, and it seems to have worked out for him.
Yeah.
Greg Patterson.
That's what we're
Greg
hoping.
Patterson. That's
yes.
That was his name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you, like I said, you danced and taught your way around the world. Last time you were here, you told a number of stories, but we didn't even begin to get to everything.
Yeah.
Lionel Hampton. I know we didn't get to Lionel Hampton. I knew that. How did you meet up with Lionel Hampton?
Well, I was booked by the Willard Alexander Agency in New York to work with Lionel Hampton at the a Seville Theater in Montreal. And then up there, he asked me to come with him to the Apollo Theater in New York, which was his next gig. And we took an overnight train and opened the next day at the Apollo. And then from there, he said, I'd like to take you south. So we went to Washington, D.C., and I worked in Washington, the Howard Theater down there. I was the Au Fait Act. This was in the 1950s. I didn't know what I was reviewed in Variety as the Au Fait Act. I didn't know what that meant, and I found out later from my agent that it meant faux. The single white act with an all black review was called the faux act.
Like you weren't real, like we've heard the term faux fur for those who don't like to wear real fur coats.
Oh, so, yeah. Well, that's false.
Yeah.
This is faux, F-O-E.
So that would be
the white act.
The white act.
Yeah. So.
You probably shouldn't pursue that anymore. but yeah, if you ever sit at the Apollo Theater, I can see that.
Right. Yeah. Right. So I, you know, did that theater tour with him, and then later on he asked me to work nightclubs with him, and we did several club, and I did my dance act. I had a 9-minute act, and it was some tap and acrobatic, and ended with baton twirling.
Wow.
And then Hamp called me one day and asked that the big bands were just waning at that time, you know, and he said that he would like me to invent a dance. A new dance. He says, I'll write the music and you create a dance form. Well, I wasn't interested really in doing that, and I never did. You talk about missed opportunities. The Macarena came out later. The Twist came out later. The Hucklebuck was in then. And so he wanted me to create a dance form and he'd write the music for it, but I didn't follow through.
So, shame on you.
And then another thing.
There might be the Mahoney. There could be a guitar called the Mahoney.
Yeah.
The
macaroni. There's still time. There's still time.
Yeah, the macaroni. There you go.
Yeah.
See what you missed out on.
So, anyway, another missed opportunity because my music arrangements were written by Towers, Kansas City, the Palace Theater musicians, and it was vaudeville and variety arrangements. And so he said, Billy, you know, if your music swung more, I could use you on more jobs. He says, there's a young musician who's written some arrangements for us, for the Lionel Hampton Band, and if you'd have him write your music, it wouldn't cost too much, it'd be cheap, and he's 18 years old, and he wrote down, and I came across this piece of paper a few years ago in a trunk, that he wrote the name and the telephone number, Quincy Jones.
Oh, really?
And,
oh,
yeah. And I did not want to go up to Harlem by myself to meet with him.
Oh. Yeah, see, you missed that.
So I missed that. I could have had my arrangements written by Quincy Jones.
The last time you were here, you said that sometimes the best things kind of happen as an accident, really.
Right.
Serendipity.
Yeah, they do.
Good word.
Yeah.
Did you tell them about the elephants?
Well, we talked about that.
We did
that
cover her
show.
Elephant
right.
Stampede. Yeah. It wasn't really your fault. But you were with the circus thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It was at the Ringling Brothers Circus, and it was in Madison Square Garden.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, did for you get out of the elephant's way, I hope?
Yes.
I remember you mentioning, but you didn't have time to go into, you toured with Bob Hope. Now, I have read in books about him that while he's very funny and loose on stage, he's very professional as far as a show he puts together.
Oh, yes. 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 It was wonderful working with him. I did college shows. At that time, he did these big college shows, and it was on the radio. It was a radio broadcast from different universities. So we did some universities and theaters, and that was very good. I know the first big arena shows, too. The first show I did with him was at Elkhart, Indiana. And my manager in New York, his office was across the hall from Bob Hope's manager and Charlie Yates. And Charlie and Bob Hope would play. They were close friends, and they would play golf together. Well, Charlie dropped dead on the golf course.
Oh, no.
With Hope. And so when I may break up with this. So the first job I worked with him in Elkhart, Indiana, big theater, and the name band was rehearsing another act, and I'm down on the floor practicing my batons, getting ready, you know, to go through my act with the band. And Bob Hope came down and picked, I did two batons, so I'm practicing with one baton, the other baton's laying over there. He picked it up and swung it like a golf club, and he says, "Charlie's told me about you."
Yeah. Well, we knew he was big on golf. He has his own golf tournament out in, is it Palm Street?
Right.
Palm Springs.
Right.
And then he wrote this book later in life.
Yeah.
When I first saw it listed, I kind of went, what? It was called My Life as a Hooker. I thought, what could he possibly? But he was talking about his golf shot not being so straight.
And he also owned a baseball club at that time.
Well, I believe there was a family interest in the Cleveland Indians at one time. His friend Crosby had a partial interest in the Pirates. So the Pirates and the Indians, I don't think, played each other very much. So that didn't cause their friendship to wane at all.
But I remember we'd played, was it Des Moines or some wherever it was, and Amana was the Amish community near there.
Yes.
And one of the former players in his club lived in this Amish community, so they took the whole show out there, and he had a restaurant there, and so he was very close with this former player, and they sat and talked and talked and talked and talked, and we had dinner.
Sure.
and he was very friendly with him.
Yeah. Now, like I said earlier, he ran such a professional show. Was that obvious as he put together and sort of directed the show?
Well,
he probably had an official director, but I have a feeling that he probably
saw. In the variety days, you just came in with your act and rehearsed with the name band and knew what spot you were on the show, and that was it.
Yeah.
So in the old variety, there'd be the opening sight act. And then the next act would be a singer it was a big name singer that was on the show with us. And then the second half would open with a side act that would get the next closing act would be an act that would get the audience up and excited. And with Bob Hope, I was the next closing act.
Ah. Mm.
So I felt very privileged with that he used my act right before he came on.
Yeah, you've met all of these celebrities, so it's only natural at some point you would get your own show. You had a television show in New York that kind of continues on its own way to this day.
I do have a show now. Plays on, Access Television.
Channel 17. Nicole and I know about Access.
Yes, we do. We go back a long way.
That's right.
Cable Access.
Well, I started the show in 1980 when Access was brand new, and I had I was getting my master's degree in media studies, and so we were asked to intern on the Access television there, so I volunteered. Yeah, so I did camera and character generator, all of that stuff. It was a call-in talk show. I ended up monitoring the calls and directing the show, and then I was called the producer of the show. Did that for 2 or 3 years, and I thought, I can do this, because it was not a very attractive man that's on television, and people loved him, and they called him. I says, you just have to communicate with people. And so I was teaching at the Juilliard School at the time, so I talked to my students and found out that what heart-wrenching stories they had to be able to pursue a career in dance and come there and do dance. One young student said that his dad would send him to any Ivy League college in the country, but not to Juilliard to study dance. So they were working their way, and there was a Asian couple. One was from Taiwan, and the other was from China, and their families had disowned them. And he was studying a law in New York, and she had a scholarship for dance, but they worked in a Chinese restaurant all night long to make expenses, because you get your school scholarship, that doesn't pay for your room and board.
No, it doesn't.
So so there were all these stories, and I thought, people have to know what dancers go through to be up there on stage. So I started doing my show with the people in my class at the New School, in my media class, as the crew. And And then eventually my Juilliard students, they were eager to be on the crew, and I taught them how to pan and zoom. And so I did the show in New York for 15 years. I played twice a week on cable. I've recorded shows in Hong Kong and in Budapest and in Chicago and Texas and all over the world. I've recorded shows wherever I go to teach, and then I find out the Access cable station and record shows there. We did a bunch of them at Stanford University when I was teaching there, and in San Francisco. So, and then about 3 years ago, the Kansas City Ballet asked if I would document their people who come in, the choreographers who come in and document people. So I started doing them here. I'd done 250 shows before I left New York.
Wow.
And then I resumed them out here 3 years ago, and now we've done over 100 here in Kansas City. There are so many great dancers and dance personalities here, and many who have had Broadway careers who are back here now teaching, and the stories of the Kansas City Ballet people and people from City in Motion and all these different dance companies. And so I did three shows a couple of weeks ago. Eddie Villella, who passed through here, we grabbed him and he came in and we did a fast show with him. I had known him in New York when he was 18, and so he was here for the Harem and Jewel series, 50th anniversary. Uh-huh. And so most of the people I can relate to who they've studied with are known, and I started doing the shows with my teachers, my colleagues, and my students. B.B. Newworth, who's on Secretary.
She was on Cheers. Cheers. Yeah,
and,
that's
and
where
she was on
famous.
Cheers, and now she's on the Secretary, I saw last night. B.B. was a dynamic guest. She's my student
at Juilliard.
She did
Chicago on Broadway, I
right.
believe. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you another story about that. She was my student at Juilliard. I also do Laba notation, which is a system of recording movement, which I teach now at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. So I had a commitment to notate a number from Sweet Charity, and so I was working on the notation, came back to Juilliard, and had my students read what I'd notated, and B.B. was one of those students who read Sweet Charity from my notation as a student. Later, she won the Tony Award for doing it on Broadway.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what's so neat about Billy's show, is that we not only have people like Edward Villella coming through, and she's able to document those people before we lose these treasures, you know, in real life. But she also has these people from way back when they were not as big, or in New York City, you know, when they were big, but before they passed away. She has Alvin Ailey. I mean, some of her shows are like gold.
Todd Bolander. I had two shows with Todd Bolander when I was in New York, and I would come home to Kansas City, passing through here, and go to American Cablevision and record some shows. So at that time, we did the KU faculty, the UMKC dance faculty, and the Kansas City Ballet.
Now, I'm not sure about the times. Where I live, this, which is in the eastern part of the county, Independence, Blue Springs, Raytown, all that, it's Channel 20.
No, Channel 17.
Well that in his area, it's Channel 20.
So in a lot of Kansas City, it's Channel 17. So it's Channel 17 if you have Time Warner cable,
right,
I guess.
Right, Time Warner.
In our area, it's Comcast, and it's on Channel 20 then. Is there any regular time where they can find
you? Well, we are scheduled seven times a week, two shows back to back, Sunday, Tuesday and Thursday, 9 a.m. to 10, then 3 in the afternoon to 4 o'clock. So we do two shows, and then again it's repeated Thursday evening at 7 o'clock.
Do you ever pull out any of the old shows?
Oh, yes. Well, we just played, next week we'll play Alvin Ailey, when I interviewed him before he dreamed of coming to Kansas City, and Tyrone Aiken. Have those shows back to back. Tyrone Aiken is now director of the Friends of Alvin Ailey. And at that time, my dad had sent me a clipping that Alvin Ailey might come to Kansas City, which I had showed him when he did my show. He said, no way, I wouldn't go to Kansas City. Why would I go to Kansas City? If I'm going to do any work, I'll do it in Los Angeles, my hometown. Then the gentleman of distinction gave him an offer he could not refuse, and look what we've got now here.
That's
again.
Right.
I saw the company last week. They were marvelous, the best I've ever seen them.
So let's review once again another Tap Jam, Thursday, November 6th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Uptown Arts Bar. If you haven't been there, 3611 Broadway, Kansas City, Missouri. If you met Questings, 64111. UptownArtsBar.com would be one of the things you can check out with. You could Billy Mahoney on tap, period, WordPress, period, or dot, they say these days. Yeah. Billy Mahoney on tap, .wordpress.com. Also, information at cityinmotion.org, theartsbar.com, and on Facebook as well. Can they be a friend of Billy Mahoney on Facebook?
I do not do Facebook.
You could have City in Motion if you like.
Okay, then you can become a friend of cityinmotion.com. As usual, the time goes so fast.
Oh, it does.
We have less than 2 minutes left in the hour. Anything you want to plug other than the Tap Jam?
Well, wait a minute. We didn't get to talk about the Marine Corps parade.
Okay.
I was on USO in Korea, and I was the only woman to participate in an official military parade. We'd been there on USO, and the full colonel decided that he'd like to bring me back to lead 2,000 Marines. And I led the band. I led the band around, and this is on the airstrip, and then stood next to the commanding officer as 2,000 Marines passed in review, and the colonel says, "Eyes right," and they looked, and I'm in my short outfit. I've just done the baton twirling. And they all grin, and the colonel grin as the Marines grin.
So
that was very exciting.
And speaking of military, we've got a Christmas show at Union Station, December 7th at 2 o'clock.
Oh, yes.
Celebrating, December 7th.
Yeah, Pearl Harbor Day.
Pearl Harbor Day.
Yes.
I'm
producing that whole show using all the City in Motion dancers, my tap troupe. I have over 50 plus, I mean, over the age 50 tap dancers, and they'll be performing there at Union Station in the Big Rotunda.
I guess cityinmotion.org for information about that.
Right, exactly.
Thanks for being with us. I know it's fast. It always goes fast. Billy Mahoney, her big Tap Jam is coming up Thursday, November 6th at the Uptown Arts Bar, 3611 Broadway. Mike Ning, Verl Victor of Perlmutter, and Nicole English with us as well. What is your title with City in Motion?
School director.
Yeah, but she also dances.
Yes, she teaches.
The hula, and other things as well.
Yes.
Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Jazz
Mike.
Insider is next. He has some great jazz coming up. KKFI is known for its jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.